What would you do if your online store converted 36% more shoppers? You could take 36% more vacation.
Another pina colada?
Yes, please.
Open a new retail location with 36% more square feet.
Fantastic.
Hire 36% more help.
You're hired and you're hired.
Shopify has the world's best converting checkout, up to 36% better than other e-commerce platforms. What you do with those extra sales is up to you. Switch to Shopify today at shopify.com/setup and get a $1 trial. Shopify.com/setup.
You didn't start a business just to keep the lights on. You're here to sell more today than yesterday. You're here to win. Lucky for you, Shopify built the best converting checkout on the planet. Like the just one tapping, ridiculously fast acting, sky high sales stacking champion of checkouts. That's the good stuff right there. So if your business is in it to win it, win with Shopify. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/win.
I'm Kiana, and I leveled up my business with Shopify. Once I figured out that Shopify was a thing, I never turned back. I can create a site with my eyes closed. Shopify thinks ahead of us, you know, and it thinks about the customer more than anything. Every day I'm thinking about some other new business, but Shopify is doing it to me because it's so easy to use. It's like I can't stop. I'm addicted.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
You didn't start a business just to keep the lights on. You're here to sell more today than yesterday. You're here to win. Lucky for you, Shopify built the best converting checkout on the planet. Like the just one tapping, ridiculously fast acting, sky high sales stacking champion of checkouts. That's the good stuff right there. So if your business is in it to win it, win with Shopify. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/win.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
So we have some clips to go through from Dateline NBC and their recent reporting on Brian Koberger. It was quite a story. The episode itself, The Horrible Night on King Road, on the 9th of May. So you can go back and watch that on the Dateline archive. If you have Peacock, that's where you can certainly stream it. I do highly suggest. It was a very good episode. But let's break down some of the reporting that was done by our friends over there and what came out. We saw the preview not that long ago. And in fact, why don't we just start with that, with the actual preview of the episode. Then we'll go into some of the some clips from the episode itself and break some of that down. Here is the trailer for what we're about to be talking about from Dateline.
In this house, just steps from campus, in the early morning hours of November 13th, 2022, four University of Idaho students, Maddie Mogan, Kaylee Gonsalves, Xander Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin, were stabbed to death. Their accused killer, Brian Koberger, faces trial this summer. He's pleaded not guilty. For the last 2.5 years, Dateline has been on the ground, reporting, gathering, and learning from people with direct knowledge of the case. We've obtained things that have never before been seen publicly. Like these security videos from a camera on a house near the murder scene. Videos that show a white sedan, a car that investigators believe was driven by Brian Koberger, making repeated passes of the King Road house that night before the murders. With evidence like this and our reporting, we have assembled a timeline for the weeks, months, and days before and after the murders. Starting with a pool party Koberger attended in July, just after he moved to the area in pursuit of his PhD in criminology. An exclusive interview with a woman who exchanged numbers with Koberger, then did not return his text.
You know, the universe intervened and for whatever reason just distracted me from further engaging in that interaction.
We'll also reveal records from Koberger's cell phone that are in the possession of law enforcement and Google searches regarding the serial killer Ted Bundy. We have also seen these. Dozens of photos in Koberger's cell phone. Browsing history. Women from Washington State and the University of Idaho, including close friends of the King Road victims. Dateline has also obtained records showing the details of what an FBI cell phone expert has claimed to be in the months before the murders, 23 occasions when Koberger's phone connected to a cell tower, providing coverage to within 100 meters of the house at 1122 King Road. And in the hours after the murders, Details of the timing of phone calls Brian Koberger made to a phone linked to his parents just before the controversial selfie he took. And we'll talk to the mother whose daughter was supposed to be staying in the house the night of the murders. But a change of plans may have saved her daughter's life.
How soon was it that you thought, my God, she was going to be there?
I didn't think about that right away.
Oh.
All I could think about was the kids.
Makes you sad too, doesn't it?
It does. Sorry.
Keith Morrison reporting on this, and it is, it's quite an episode. You got a chance to watch it before we jump into some of the clips. What was your reaction after seeing it?
I'm astounded at the interactions that he had had with other students, women in particular. We've heard a few different pieces, but now we've got confirmation that he was sliding into people's DMs. He was being awkward around people. We had heard that before, but now we've got some more confirmation mm-hmm. about it. And what really struck me was the surveillance footage that they had of this car.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to know, and I don't know that we'll ever know this, was he driving up to the house and seeing that, oh, there's too many cars there, I can't go in? Or was he second-guessing himself, I'm not ready to do this yet? You know, what was going on in that brain? Where was he at? Did he look and go, too many people are awake, I can't go in? Or I can't do this.
That's a big question that I've been asking for quite a while now. And I'm curious what everybody thinks out there. Let us know in the comments on YouTube, if you're watching this, what your thoughts are on that. Because I'm wondering, what was that the night where he knew he's leaving Pullman? If it's him, obviously he's innocent until proven guilty, alleged, assume we're saying alleged in front of everything. When he left Pullman that night, did he know that was going to be the night? Was that the night that he was ready to go and do this? Or did he have everything ready in his vehicle amongst the other 20-some times he's surveilled the house or stalked the house, however you want to look at it? And was he just waiting for the moment, just that feeling of, okay, let's go, let's do it right now? Did he have to build that up in himself? Or was this marked off on his calendar that this is the day this is going to be going down? I don't know the answer to that.
And how do you choose a day like that if you are allegedly a killer?
Well, yeah.
How do you just throw a dart at the calendar and go, this is the day? Or is there some special meaning? Did the game have anything to do with it?
Well, and surveilling college students, I can't imagine that's an easy thing, because it's not like it's someone who's into their life pattern, into work. And, you know, right. I guess, you know, some studies you could say, well, they've got a class here and there, but half the time they don't go, or half the time it's done. You know, it's such an erratic lifestyle at that time. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of patterns going on.
Right.
So how, I don't know how you would ever like really nail down, okay, here's where the house is going to be like this, because the house, I don't think, had much of a pattern other than people eventually went to sleep at some point in time. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you didn't know who was coming and going from this house, or any college house for that matter. So I can't imagine he found like, okay, on Saturday at this time of the night, it's going to be clear, because it wasn't. And he didn't know when it would be or not. I just think, I kind of feel like he was waiting in wait, like an animal, like a cat waiting to bounce on its prey. It doesn't know the exact moment it's going to happen, but it's going to sit there and it's going to wait till the time is right, and then it's going to go in when it thinks it is right. Sometimes it's correct in that assumption, and sometimes it's not at all. And Koberger certainly rolled the dice, and I don't think he necessarily got what he thought he was going to be getting as he walked into that house that night.
Do you think that's why there were so many connections between his cell phone and that tower, that maybe those were possible opportunities for him and it didn't appear to be the prime moment to do it and he left? Was he going to look at the house to see if this was a place he could do this?
I think initial surveillance was just trying to figure out where it was going to be, who the target was. And my conjecture is that the last at least handful were probably ready to go, waiting for the moment to be right. And this is where he eventually just called in and said, okay,
I'm going in.
Let's take a look at some of the clips from Dateline. This one particularly interesting. It's talking about Ethan Chapin, and Coffinaffer pointed this one out to me the other day. And I didn't catch this when I was watching it. I don't know why. You know, I was watching it. I had other things going on too, so I was probably distracted in that moment. But the stabbing of Ethan. He was the lone male in the house. In fact, he was asleep in bed when he was killed. Ethan may, you know, he probably woke up for a few seconds, but he woke up dying with his carotid artery hit. And
did you catch what they said about him being carved?
Yes, that's what I'm getting into.
Okay,
Let's just play the clip and we'll talk on the other side.
When you're dealing with crimes that are motivated by anger toward women, the men that are in the way are rapidly dispatched.
Then, according to our sources, the killer did something strange. He carved Ethan's lower legs. Carved is the specific word that was used.
If you view that person as having gotten in the way of what it is you're trying to play out, you might be overwhelmed with anger toward them and do something extra. And I think it's a clue that there was a sexualized component to this, because this was about women. There was a special anger toward that male.
It looked like the killer sat down after that, said an investigative source, and left behind impressions in blood on a bedroom chair.
He's exhausted. He's gone through four people.
People that commit mass murder don't anticipate the adrenal exhaustion that's going to overwhelm them when they do it.
That's from Dateline, NBC. Carved. That's a word. That's one you don't hear a lot in stabbing situations or murder situations. Carved.
Deliberate.
It gives me just the shivers. Yeah, very deliberate. You know, that's passion. That's anger. That's that's jealousy.
Rage.
That's rage. Exactly. For someone, he's looking at Ethan going, "You're everything I'm not. You're getting with these women, you're friends with these people, you're in a relationship with one of these women, you know, you're everything I'm not." And rather than ever introspectively looking at himself and going, "Gee, maybe it's me," he looks at everybody else as it's their fault, and they're the ones that are picking on him and hurting him and put him where he is. It's not that Brian Koberger is so off-putting to human beings that no one wants to be around him by choice. And so he has that pent up. And I think my take on this is, I think he wanted this to be a sexual assault. And when he, you know, realized that there's these other people in there, and by the time he got to Ethan, I think he was angry that, you know, Ethan spoiled his plans a little bit, because if he had woken up, I mean, Ethan really didn't even need to be killed. Nobody needed to be killed, but Ethan was there. I mean, Ethan could have woken up to this and found all of this. If Koberger had a little iota of anything in him, or any sort of forethought other than what is just in his blinders path of seeing, why not leave him alive? Then there's another person there that could be looked at as a suspect. But no. And to carve into him is just, that's someone who's angry at the men who are getting the women that he thinks that he should be entitled to. Mm-hmm. Because he's just such a smart, good guy in his mind.
Yeah, so. Ethan was a winner. And repeatedly, time after time, Brian was not.
Yeah.
Brian turned to drugs to quell the ache, you know? And now here he's confronted in the same room with somebody that is the opposite image of him, of what he wanted to be. And whether he would say out loud, "I want to be that" or not.
Yeah.
I think
it's all internal.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, just to take a cultural reference, if you've ever watched like The Big Bang Theory, Sheldon Cooper, the most awkward character, but he finds a friend group. And even though he's awful to them sometimes, they just take him for what he is and they still love him. I think misfits can be accepted into groups. They just need to be willing to bend a little bit, you know, that, oh, hey, sometimes you have to ask how people are doing and say good morning to them.
That's the
thing. You can learn that.
Misfits used to find their groups, and it was that. But the problem is these groups are self-loathing now. And
yes,
and they're making their awkwardness into a cause and a charge to do something against those horrible people who are not like them. I mean, it's really an ironic thing because they're their own thing, but they're saying this thing over here is not right, but we are. And it's like, you're just your own person. Just go find peace in yourself. Go figure that out. I mean,
these groups can coexist. You can be that misfit group.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, I'm Gen X. We had our misfits, yeah, you know, we had the punk rockers, mm-hmm, that had the spiky hair and yeah, the stupid outfits. And, you know, at the end of the day, we were all trying to just get the hell out of high school and do our thing, you know, and you let each other do your thing. And sometimes you came together, you know, you both hated the same teacher. You worked it out, you know, but there didn't need to be just this horrible Crips versus the Bloods kind of thing.
It's a culture of victimization and looking at victimization as a lifestyle is really what it's turned into, rather than, hey, let me grow, let me get better. Maybe, you know, my way of thinking as a child or as a teenager was kind of off. Maybe I need to figure out better ways of getting into society. But nobody pushes that anymore. It's like, oh, well, you're yourself. You're great just as you are. Yeah, maybe you are. But you know what? We all have room for improvement. Mm-hmm. So why don't we take that opportunity rather than sit in our own self-loathing forever and then wonder why nothing's working out? Like, take a look inside and maybe you'll do better. Google search history, another big thing that came up in the Dateline special. Let's take a look at that.
He is Googling phrases related to pornography. His searches include the words forced, passed out, drugged, sleeping. That mean anything to you?
Interesting, isn't it? These are all themes of power, domination, and control.
But now, late in August, school was starting at WSU in Pullman. He was part of a PhD cohort and ready to begin work on becoming Dr. Ryan Kohlberger.
A little more to this.
Ryan Kohlberger was more than just a student that autumn of 2022 here at Washington State University. He'd been given added responsibility as a teaching assistant, or TA, meaning that in addition to his PhD studies, he'd be leading classes and grading papers. It didn't go well.
He was very demanding. He felt he was the smartest person in the room, and he wanted his students to approach somewhere his level of expertise, and they resented this.
In our reporting, we've heard complaints about Kohlberger, accusations of sexism, for one thing. Maddie Mogan's friend Katie heard about it, too, from students she employed at her clothing store.
Yeah, so you got that. You got a lot of people who are talking about Kohlberger and knowing, you know, really what's up with the guy. And those Google searches.
You know, it didn't have to be this way. You know, if you look at what he was going to become, he had a future in front of him. And, you know, this is all alleged. We don't know that he did this. But he didn't have to be an outcast. Especially in college, you can find your people. Your people are there. You just need to find them.
Do you think, though, sometimes you just can't? You're just such a broken person that there's not going to be anybody else out there that's going to be good with this. I mean, he couldn't even put on the front. He couldn't even, like, fake it a little bit to try and bring people in. And then, you know, then they're there. Then they kind of have some history with him. And then maybe the relationship doesn't just get thrown away immediately. He doesn't seem to have the ability to even start a relationship in any way, shape, or form that feels human. And that's why he's just so off-putting to pretty much every person he encounters.
However, there was that one person, was it the other teaching assistant, or he had an office with her and the,
oh yeah,
they, they kind of had, I wouldn't say they had a relationship, but they seemed to have a few things in common and got to know each other a little bit.
And then she needed, the allegation is Koberger broke into her house, rearranged stuff in her bathroom, like put like her makeup supplies, like lined them up neatly, like on a on the vanity or something. And she was concerned. It was like, what the hell? Like somebody broke in, and nothing was stolen. Nothing was taken as far as she knew, but she was friends with Koberger and shared an office at WSU as a teaching assistant as well. And then reached out to him because she, I guess, you know, was kind of, you know, wallflower for lack of a better term. And reached out to him saying, hey, I think I need to put a security camera in. And then he jumped at that opportunity. But I think allegedly he kind of set this whole situation up where he was going to cause the problem. He's going to be the savior. He's going to come in and fix this. And at the same time, have access to her Wi-Fi password and access to the security camera that he all set up for her. And she is none the wiser.
And but she again, looks, here's somebody he could connect with. He's missing that opportunity. And what a shitty way to connect with somebody. I'm going to go and break into your place and scare the shit out of you so that you come to me because you need somebody.
That's what I mean. I don't know this guy's capable of it. I just think some people are so out there and their mind works in such a weird, sick, different way. I mean, I'm really feeling like he's more and more into that sociopath area than ever before.
And you might be absolutely right. And it breaks my heart that somebody is out there that can't find human connection. And maybe it's not that they can't find it. They don't know how to cultivate it and they can't figure it out because it's out there.
For most, yes. But if a brain doesn't know how to do it, they don't know. It's like trying to put a cassette tape into a CD player. And half of our audience doesn't even know what that is. But but it's like, is there music on it? Sure. But you're a cassette tape. You're never going to be a CD. So as much as you want to say, you know, it looks like it's the same sort of cover as the CD. It, you know, it looks like it does something, but it's not, if the player is not playing it right, and it's like a mismatch. And then you just kind of have elements that look on the surface like a person. But at the end of the day, it's a CD player trying to play a cassette. And that's not going to happen. It's just not going to work no matter what you do. Let's look at another one. This is about the chilling bathroom selfie and kind of the timeline of all of that.
At 10:31 a.m., he took this selfie in his bathroom mirror.
It's gross.
The prosecutors released it 7 weeks ago. Reaction was immediate and worldwide, much like this.
There's a shower behind him. He's now into new clothes, and now he's celebrating.
He talked about looking into the mirror and seeing himself as a nothing. And then after these crimes, he's giving a thumbs up, which implies now he's somebody. And notice it's a mirror. It's a reflection. I'm somebody in the eyes of other people.
And an hour after that selfie was snapped, records show that Brian Koberger's cell phone hit a tower serving the towns of Clarkston and Lewiston, 34 miles south of Pullman. Police theorize he could have been disposing of evidence, a knife, perhaps, or possibly clothes worn during the killings.
And then there's a river down there near Lewiston, so...
Yeah, that's right. A very likely place that he could have discarded it. It's very difficult to retrieve.
So that's where the knife and such may be. Robin had was it Robin or somebody had a theory the other day about the knife and their odd drive out to Pennsylvania when him and his dad took off there for Thanksgiving, where eventually he was arrested. Because the trek ended up putting them several hours out of the way for no real reason that made any sense. Others have wondered if maybe that could be an area where something was disposed of. Not that the dad would know it or anything, but, you know, Brian had something with him. And rather than drop it in that general vicinity, but who knows? I mean, if he really needed to get rid of it quickly, that would have probably been the most sensical. But keep in mind, he's back at home and he's wearing those gloves in Pennsylvania obsessively. So I very much think the murder was still on his mind. And he was trying to be as careful as he could be at that point because he knew people were onto him. This car was being looked for. And I think there was that huge sense of, oh my gosh, like, what if they do get me? I think was starting to be realized when he went out there to Pennsylvania. What are your thoughts?
Can you imagine as he's on that drive with his dad and they get pulled over and you see the flashing lights?
The look at his face in those videos.
Yeah, he looks terrified. Like, at any second, they are going to figure out who I am and what I've allegedly done.
Yeah.
Like, they were looking for that car. Why was he pulled over? Was it speeding?
It was driving too close to a vehicle.
Oh, that's right.
Twice in a row within like a few minutes.
Now, here's the thing. And I'm not proud of this. I drove drunk. I've done that twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
When you are doing something you shouldn't be doing, you are extra careful. Like, every stop sign would not be a rolling stop sign. I would stop, car would come to a complete stop. And then I would proceed, like, you know, just and two with my hands. I mean, everything, you know, seatbelts on, speed limit 55, you know, all the stuff. Why would you be, if you are concerned that, wow, my exact description of car, you know, I'm driving the car they're looking for, why would you be doing anything that might raise suspicion, that might get you pulled over twice?
Well, I think that's where I'm wondering a little bit of, was he truly doing that, or were they just pulling him over to make sure they were following the right guy?
There's a good theory.
Because we still don't know exactly all of the details of how all of that went down with the highway patrol and such. Another thing of note in that, where he's taking the selfie in the morning with the thumbs up, he also called his parents twice.
Yeah.
And those weren't short conversations. It wasn't, hey, happy Saturday. Are you watching Garfield on ABC? No, or it was CBS. No, it was...
almost an hour.
It was an hour-long phone. Two, like one was like 20-some minutes, and the other was like 40-some, I believe. I could be off by a bit, but it's not much. What the hell were those conversations about?
Yeah, you know, when you're... when you're far away from home and you do something you're proud of and you want to share with your parents, obviously he's not going to share what if he allegedly did this, but to get that satisfaction of your parents' approval in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm because judging by the photo, he seemed to be in a pretty good mood that morning. And
it was early. It wasn't, it was, you know, usually on a Saturday morning, don't you call it like 9 or 10? Because you don't want to wake someone up. This was like, what, 7?
It was like, I believe, 5, 6, 7, somewhere in that area.
It was
very
early.
Yeah.
Like, there better be something fucking wrong if you're calling me at that hour during the day.
That's,
I don't care who you are. Don't call me at that hour unless, you know, shit's on fire and I need to call 911 kind of a thing.
If they are called as witnesses, that'll be very interesting to hear what those conversations were like. And in no way am I insinuating that I think his parents heard from him that he just killed these people. I don't think that at all. I would just be very interested in the tone. What was he talking about? Why was he talking about it? Was he, you know, was it kind of one of those moments where he felt fulfilled and he had purpose? I'm honestly guessing it was probably they walked away from that conversation going, oh, maybe he's found some people he likes. Maybe he's in a good place. He sounds to be in a good place. And you're walking away from that going, that's great. I'm really happy for my son. But the only reason he's there is because he just murdered 4 college students. I mean, that's got to be the creepy one you're wrapping your mind around as those parents. And I do feel very bad for them. Let's talk about this. Let's look at this. This is, any time you're doing anything in life, just put yourself in the shoes of yourself for a moment. We have different things that we surround ourselves with that enhance our mood, maybe put us in a certain mood, maybe pull us out of a certain mood. One of those things tends to be music. Here's a look at some of the things that Brian Koberger was listening to.
Koberger watched a video on his phone containing this quote. It read, "Something is wrong with me. I can't be who I need to be. Something is wrong with me. Will it last for eternity?
It doesn't fit into society.
Then Later that morning...
How you doing?
How y'all doing today?
The Kohberger's father and son were pulled over in Indiana.
He was right up on the back end of that van.
Not once, but twice. We're following too closely.
Make sure you give yourself plenty of room, okay?
3 days after the Kohbergers arrived back home in Albrightsville, Pennsylvania, the FBI had traced the DNA on the knife sheath to a geographic area, the Northeast, then to a family, the Kohbergers, and finally settled on a likely suspect in the murders on King Road, Brian Kohberger. Later that week, two more selfies of Kohberger in a black hoodie showed up on his phone. And as Christmas came and went, a source close to the investigation has confirmed.
So, he's doing more selfies. More, I mean, that, and if those selfies tell us anything, it looks like he's kind of trying to redress the way he did allegedly during the killings.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's his glory uniform.
Yeah.
That's, you know, anybody who was on a sports team in high school, that kind of thing. There's just this power you feel when you put on your whatever uniform it is, especially if that was your glory moment, you know, to put that cheerleading sweater on again and go, huh, yeah, I remember those days. Well, is he remembering again what it was allegedly like afterwards?
Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. I still have some radio station t-shirts from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think I recently got rid of my 95.5 WIFC jacket not that long ago. I think you still got yours?
Oh, this is so bad, Tony.
You burned it.
What is today when we're recording this? It's Tuesday. This will air on Wednesday.
Yeah.
On Sunday, I was cleaning out an old... box in my closet,
yeah.
And I had a WIFC like baseball jersey that said
yeah.
Cole on the back,
yeah, yeah.
And it had 95.5 on the front. Tony and I worked there for
yeah.
a while, many, many years ago. I threw it out.
Yeah.
I felt bad because I know it was expensive. It was like $80 for this thing.
But what are you going to do with it now?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to donate it because... Yeah. I don't want somebody running around with my radio
yeah.
name.
Yeah. Your name is on a cusp. Yeah. That's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it felt weird, but yeah, I threw it out.
I dumped the jacket a while ago. I still have some t-shirts from my very first station and those I will mm-hmm. hold on to. But yeah, I mean, but that's a positive. That's a good memory.
Yeah.
I remember doing this. I was a kid and it was fun and all that, but yeah. I mean, so in a lot of ways we do these sort of things as humans in normal context. It's mm-hmm. just, he's in a very weird context and still doing the same sort of things. So people keep their trophies. They keep their memorabilia. It's just as weird when it's something of this nature for alleged murder.
Well, it's a reminder. It's almost like a concert t-shirt. You had a great time at this concert.
Yeah.
You bought the $50 shirt to commemorate, you know, this wonderful concert you went to. Every time you put it on, you go, oh, I remember what that felt like.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's probably the same exact thing.
Yeah. It's like that when I put on the lingerie that I've stolen from my mother years ago. I feel like I'm kidding.
You are not a creepy guy. Don't even try. Nice try.
Just makes me feel like a woman, you know?
Oh, but, well, you know, to each his own.
Yeah, exactly. Why not? Let's go to another one. This is just another look at some of his fantasies. Again, this is from Dateline just the other
night. He's clearly trolling and getting stimulated by looking at people who in his mind fuel the fantasy.
And with the trial just weeks away, how will his attorneys defend Brian Kohberger with the death penalty hanging over his head? How do you mount a defense to all that stuff?
Piece by piece. And if one... card falls, then the house can fall.
So he's, you know, online and he's looking at these pictures of these women. And I gotta say, Kohberger seems like a chesty type of guy. Like that.
Yeah, he's got a type.
He's got a, yeah. It seems like the pictures that have been shown to us on Dateline, that seems to be what he's into. And to a healthy, normal human being, everybody's got their thing. I see nothing wrong with that. But when you consider it all together with the context and then who was killed and right. who they believe the target to be, what I'd be curious about is, do these women resemble her? And the other question is the porn that he's looking at. Do the women, mm-hmm. do the specific things he was looking up, I don't know if it was videos, if it was images, whatever it was, do any of them resemble her?
I think you can tell from some of them they do.
Yeah, well, I mean, these are just his photos. I mean, I want to see the search history on the porn stuff. Like, what specific pages are you going to? What specific videos are you watching? And do these women look like the victims that you are targeting? And what we heard about was that he was looking for very controlling type stuff. Very dark, very forceful, very, you know, not wanted sexual contact.
Rex Yorman.
Yeah, that sort of thing. So I'm wondering how much of that fantasy we are going to see when we actually dig into what was found in that search history when it does come out on the specific places that he looked. I think that'll be very telling. I mean, and that's just, you know, it's a connect the dots situation. I don't know how much you can put stock in, well, because he looked at women that look like this and then the women that he killed look like that. I mean, it's just, it's another layer into the mind of him. He
allegedly
he went to a party when the summer or recently before everything took place. And here's a little bit of how that went down.
A source close to the investigation has told us something a party goer observed, that at one point, Ryan Koberger became fixated on two young women dressed in bikinis. Fixated was the word our source used. But one of the women was married and gave her nearby husband a nonverbal signal, rescue me. So the husband approached Koberger, and the women jumped into the pool. But we're told that Koberger didn't take the hint, brushed off the husband, moved over to the edge of the pool, near the women. It was all very off-putting, the partygoer would later say. It was the very next day, the day after the pool party, when Holly's cell phone buzzed. A message from Brian Koberger.
The wording of the text as I look back on it is kind of peculiar.
Here it is, the actual text sent July 10th, 2022 at 1:19 p.m. Quote, hey, I'm pretty sure we spoke about hiking trips yesterday. I really enjoy that activity, so please let me know. Thanks.
It was almost overly formal. I really enjoy that activity, so, you know, can you follow up with me about that?
So did Holly, in fact, let Brian Koberger know about plans to hike, as he had asked? No, she did not.
There's not really a good explanation. You know, the universe intervened and for whatever reason just distracted me from further engaging in that interaction.
Holly never saw him again.
Thank God she never saw him again. But, I mean, again, it's another layer to this where it all just seems to fall into place. Because when you look at the case and you go, okay, what type of personality is this? Who is this? And how do they think? He pretty much just checks the boxes of yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if someone like this did something like that based on how they interact with human beings when they're not killing someone, allegedly. And there's a lot of evidence that points to it in his character of who he was, who he is, his issues. And they all seem to manifest here at this one point. And you got the DNA on the sheath. And you got him buying the sheath. And you got him buying the hoodie thing or the mask. You got him. All these things are in his history.
Mm-hmm. You know, the part of the story that really concerned me a great deal was at that pool party, that the clip we just saw, mm-hmm. that even when the husband came over,
yeah,
he just still bobbed and weaved around the guy. Like most guys would be like, okay, I'm out of here, I'm done. No, he didn't see that as a threat at all.
I don't know that he didn't see it as a threat. I don't think he knew what a threat is. I don't think he knew what's appropriate. I think
that's
thing.
A given.
He just, because you and me would look like, oh, sorry, man, I didn't realize. Yeah, okay, I'm not going to intrude. But I don't think that he even, he just, everybody is just another person to him. As he even like said, like meat puppets or meat suits or something in one of his
writings.
Yeah,
meat suits.
Where everything is transactional to him. There's no emotion in anything that he does. If he gets good grades, if he studies really hard, he gets higher in school. If he says, and this is the thing, because you can't have a relationship without emotion in it. You can't have it without all of the things that make a relationship something. You can just say, okay, I am with this person. I am going to interact with you. But if there's no substance to it, there's none of you in that conversation, you're never going to get relationships that turn into anything. And it seems Koberger just kind of was always trying to follow other people's lead, if you will, or try to mimic them, and never really knew how to run a conversation or have one or partake in one and be a part of it. So it was all mechanical. It was all, well, because in his mind, well, I see other guys that talk to women, then they sleep with them. That should be about what I'm doing too. That he just thinks interacting on a basic level will then get him there. And it doesn't happen quick enough for him. And it's probably exhausting because he doesn't have empathy. He doesn't, and he talks about it in his own writing, that he doesn't have empathy. He doesn't feel things for people. He doesn't feel any connection to anybody, even his own father. And he talks about feeling horrible, or that he thinks he's horrible because he doesn't have any sort of emotion or feeling for someone who has done so much for him. He can recognize that people are doing things for him. He can recognize that, but he can't feel it. And if you can't feel it, you can't react appropriately. And at the end of the day, it's really sad. He's someone who recognized that there was a problem, but obviously never got any sort of help to fix it or find some way of living in some sort of peace. I mean, this is a tortured mind. And probably, you know, he's probably just born that way. It's probably just chemical. It's how he is. And there's sometimes you just can't change the people. And I don't know how this would have ended any other way for Koberger, because I don't think he would have ever become a successful investigator or criminologist or anything of that nature. He would have self-destructed in one of many ways. And unfortunately, it seems the way he self-destructed was going down this path, probably the only path that he knew of how to feel something. And unfortunately, that involved murdering someone. So I'm going to guess when he was studying, he kind of had inklings of like, ooh, this makes me feel something. And nothing else did. Again, all my conjecture.
You know, and there are people out there that they're just numb.
Mm-hmm.
Until they find, actually, there was an episode of Elsbeth on CBS?
Never seen it.
Some really super wealthy guy who just really could do anything he wanted to because he had so much money. He could do any experience that he wanted to. And he accidentally shot one of his friends like in the arm, and it sparked something in him. He felt something.
Yeah.
Like these, you know, some people are just so numb to the everyday experience. And then there's this one thing that just flips the switch and they go, oh my God, this is the thing.
Yeah.
In this case, it might have just been murder.
Yeah, I agree. If you,
you know, I know. I feel something when I eat chocolate. Oh my God, it's like the best thing ever, you know. And for others, it's murder.
What about eating chocolate and murdering at the same time? Now, that's a high. No.
Although I did kill. Have you ever seen one of those horrible centipede things that show up in your bathroom?
You killed a centipede and ate chocolate at the same time?
No, I did not.
Okay,
but. I felt a little twinge when I killed that thing the other day. My cat like batted it around and I put it out of its misery, but I felt like a hero for a second. So,
This will be used as evidence someday.
Yeah. But, well,
I'm glad we had the talk. There you go. That's where things are sitting in the Koberger case. It's not really far away. The trial is set for August. Jury selection starting for late July. And we are halfway to June, so.
Wow.
It's coming up, everybody.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed,
only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.